Listeners, you're invited to stream and listen to Jawzen's music on Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, AudioMac, or Deezer. Type in Jawzen in the search for artists to follow and like modern instrumental music from his discography.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Romantic Truth Podcast. Please be advised that the content of this show is for mature audiences 18 and over due to the topics discussed. Please feel free to follow and like Romantic Truth on Facebook at facebook.com/romantictruth. You may also listen to the podcast on anchor.fm/romantictruth. Now, here is your host Jawzen.
Hi everyone, Jawzen with you here, Romantic Truth, Las Vegas. You know, gentleman wrote me out of Cleveland, Ohio. Didn't want me to use his name. And what we're going to talk about today has to do with child support. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Let you know a little secret. That was my biggest fear, being single. Winding up finding out you have a kid later on by somebody you really didn't want to have a child by. That's the reason why I made sure that at least the woman I was with, I could get along with her. So if she happened to have wound up pregnant, the world wasn't going to end. Now, here's the thing that we have to look at. Let's take, for instance, in this hypothetical, that your rent is $1,000 a month. Now, not too many places you can live in California for $1,000 a month. Unless you go to Bill Harbor or somewhere like that that's kind of out the way, where there's not that many people. Cost of living is a little bit lower. And let's say you're paying $12,000 a year in rent. Now, it would be nice in this hypothetical if it stayed at $1,000 for 20 years, right? $1,000 a month for 20 years. So, we look at it. If you were to stay there for 20 years, that house would run you around, well, that apartment, sorry, not a house, would run you about $240,000 to stay there. Over a 20-year period. Now, many of you see where your wealth goes from all that work that you do, just on that small fraction of a scale. Now, of course, you're going to have rent increases. And let's say you can't afford a house. And incrementally, it goes up, we'll say, up to 12%. Through the lifetime of that. That's roughly about maybe $25,000, $26,000 in interest, or not interest, but in incremental increases that you would pay compared to where you started from. So what that means, renting would eventually run you about close to $270,000 for 20 years. Keep in mind, we're only talking $1,000 a month. Now, I want you to think about it like this. Take, for instance, you had, we'll say, two kids, a boy and a girl, and it was you and your partner. In California, the going rate is somewhere around $1,200 to $1,300 per bedroom per month. You multiply that by three. And let's say you're getting a house now. You got a stable 30-year mortgage. You see where I'm going with this, right? You can do the math. $3,900 times 12 months. Multiply that by 10. And multiply it again by three. That includes your interest as well. That can add up pretty quick, can't it? And you're hoping that that investment you're making in that property would net at least over $1 million by the time you would have that house paid off. Now, what I want you to think about is this, because you're paying for the time you don't have the money with any interest. That's what you're paying for. Every day you don't have the money to pay the balance off, interest just creeps in and bites you on the neck. Now with this, we don't think about this, but if we did, those two extra rooms for that little boy and little girl, if you itemized it out, it costs you a lot of money, doesn't it? It would just take the cost of those two bedrooms. We'll say at $1,300 a piece, at $2,600 a month, that'd add up quickly, wouldn't it? So, men, what I'm telling you is this. A family is not cheap. You may think because, okay, I'm paying the mortgage every month. You also got to look at, that's also the cost of rearing that child or rearing those children. So that means you got to have a pretty damn good job in order to sustain that. And it's hypothetical. Now, when you do the math for those two bedrooms over a 30-year period, think about how much of that money you could have put in a 401k if you only had a $1,300 a month mortgage or rent. You're not going to find $1,300 mortgages in California too readily. You probably have to go up to Beale Harbor or somewhere way out. But see, that's the part of parenting you don't think about. Now, we haven't talked about food, we haven't talked about clothing, expenses, transportation costs, a lot of other stuff. The earlier you do this, the further you'll probably be set back due to the fact that you may not have the skill sets to make that kind of money and take on that kind of responsibility. There are a lot of friends of mine that had kids when they were in the 90s. They didn't really have any skill sets, and actually didn't get those skill sets where they could make a decent career and living until they were in their mid-30s. By that time, the kids are teenagers. You wonder why grandma and grandpa might have a little money saved up later on? Because they struggled when they had the kids in the house, and they lived when they grew up and left. You have to look at it on an economic basis. The reason why a lot of these guys in business are so successful that don't have families, and these women, same way, it's because what they're doing is they're setting things up so that when they do become wealthy or do have enough money put away, they can afford it comfortably. But it's a tough go. You have setbacks, jobs, instability, you have all kinds of things going on with ups and downs of the economy. A whole bunch of things happen in the process that can make it difficult. Make it very difficult. So, what happens? We get to a point where we try to go and we not think about it. And we think, oh, you know, I only made $75,000 a year and I took care of three kids. Well, it wasn't the $75,000 that carried you over the hump. It was all that other money you spent and benefited from with those kids that got you over the hump. We don't like itemizing it like that. That's the reason why I've always looked at a family as a luxury, not as a necessity. You hear these women tell you things such as, oh, you're a man, you need your offspring. You're a man, you don't need shit. Maybe a little pussy from now and then, but really you don't need it. They convince you that you need it. The reason why a lot of men stay single is because many of them don't feel as though they're successful enough to have a family. They don't say it. They don't think they can afford it. Why do you think most of these men get so upset and want to deny the kid, want to walk away? Of course they're not ready for it. If you're 16 or 17 or 18 and you have somebody pregnant, you don't even have the skill sets to go out there and get a job that will be sustainable for that family. And oh yeah, you go get a construction job, you get a factory job, you get a warehouse job. And what happens when your back goes out? What happens when you get injured? What happens when you're the only source of income in that household? Especially the main source. Oh, your lifestyle takes a hit. And some people think, oh, well, I'll just go on disability. Let me tell you something about disability. You won't get your full check. Same thing with workers' comp. I remember one workers' comp case I was privy to. You know how much workers' comp paid in California at that time, back in the 80s? $224 a week. Unless you had some other kind of wrongful injury claim or something like that, personal injury, 24 a week. Then you had to wait till your Social Security disability kicked in. So those of you who are working thinking that people who get injured on the job or get ill have such a free ride, you don't know shit. Another thing too, some of you don't know every day when you go to work if it's the day that you might get hurt. You don't. And taking on a family, you're taking on a big risk. And yeah, going for the money is fine. And half of you who go for the money hate some of the jobs that you work for that money. Remember, a few years ago, back in the Dakotas, when fracking was the big thing and people were going in, paying ridiculous prices for apartments and houses, and everybody and their cousin was trying to get out there, get a job. Remember the Alaska pipeline? Same thing. You gotta ask yourself, okay, what am I gonna do if this job ends? What am I gonna do if I get injured? You better have a secondary plan, a secondary set of skills or something to help you along the way. Because your energy and that can-do attitude and that invincibility shit, it's gonna go out of the window real quick. You're treated differently when that occurs. You don't have the same status. Then you start to realize that the people that you thought were in your corner, they won't have nothing to do with you. And those that do, they're going to really be there for you. Throughout my days, I had the opportunity to talk to a lot of people that were disabled. A lot of people that got injured on the job. And I can tell you one thing. It's a whole different world. And those very co-workers and friends that shared lunch with you and all these other things and knew your business and you knew theirs, they're no longer talking to you. They were never your friends in the first place. It's just like you being in an elevator in close quarters with somebody and that you have to coexist with for a momentary period of time. That means you got to have career flexibility. That means that you're going to have to start using your brains more than your hand and your back. That means that when training comes about in that company, you should be the first one in line to get it for your longevity. There are a lot of companies that do a lot of things for safety. I remember when I was contracted Union Pacific Railroad. They had a lot of safety training. Oh, and they'd jump in your ass if you came out on a yard without steel-toed boots and a hard hat and the reflecting jacket that you were supposed to wear. That was a tearaway, so just in case you got too close to the train and one of the components of the train got a hold of your reflective jacket, it would just rip it off as opposed to dragging you down with it under the wheels. A lot of safety training. They used to have this brake that they had put on the tracks when the train was stopped at a yard. It was a blue brake. It was a metal thing that they'd put down on the track and they'd screw it in. So that if the train or locomotive went forward, it couldn't. Safety. Now, I know it's unfortunate what happened to those good folks in Ohio, and my heart goes out to you. Derailments and so forth. And those things, they will happen. Because those tracks sit on ground that is, in some places, they can't control it. Because, after all, we're on this planet as residents. This is not ours. We're just here living on it. So with that, you want to have something where as you take on more responsibility, you're taking on less risk. When you're young, you're taking these risky jobs and, oh, you're going to get in the hottest girls and all this good stuff. You get hurt. And you got to worry about her sticking around. There was a kid I knew that worked in steel, with steel fabrication. He was 19. Working his ass off, doing everything the right way. And one day, he went between two girders, two of these steel girders. And you weren't supposed to walk across there, but he was trying to take a shortcut to get to the other side of the facility. And when he did, this forklift was trying to lift one of the girders up. And when it did, it rolled off. It broke the lower half of his leg in half. The had to go get extensive surgery. They had to put a rod in. He wasn't able to work again. Well, they sent him to rehab. And the job he wound up doing paid $8 an hour. The job he had was paying him $29. It's a whole different transition. And you gotta prepare for that. That's the reason why you don't spend as you earn. Unless you have something put away for yourself. See, I always had a cash reserve because I knew I had glaucoma. And at any point, because I didn't know much about the disease, I thought that you just woke up one day and couldn't see. I feel like I got educated by my doctors. The doctor said, oh no, it's a gradual thing. It just slowly creeps up on you. It may be aggressive, but you're gonna rarely notice until you start trying to look in your periphery and you're gonna hit blind spots. If you ever wanna know what glaucoma would be like, take your thumb and your index finger, put them together, and gradually roll your index finger inside your thumb while you're looking through it. That'll give you an idea of how your vision will go over time if you have glaucoma, open angle. And meanwhile, while that's going on, you're gonna feel pressure in your eyes. And it's gonna be a gradual, slow process. And then you probably might not see something and bump into something or trip over something that you normally wouldn't. Because your field of vision is reduced. I'm telling you this, so just in case you wind up in a situation, you want to make sure you have some kind of contingency plan with your partner about what's going to happen if something were to happen to me at work. We're going to talk more in a minute. Now, you might be taking a risk also if you get into an industry that's really hot right now and it fades away overnight. There are a lot of them out there. And you have to be mindful and careful about the career path you choose. You want something with longevity. You want something that's going to last. And you want something that's going to reap you benefits. The last thing you want to do is get caught flat-footed. This is the reason why I say you want to have secondary and tertiary choices as far as careers. If things are going good for you at one job, don't get complacent and just focus on that particular thing. You want to diversify your skill sets, your talents. You want to learn to do more than one thing. You see, it used to be where companies would cover people from cradle to the grave. You didn't have to worry about anything. That company slapped that t-shirt on you, and you were a team member for life. Well, many of those days have gone past. Companies are not so much into legacy employees anymore. They appreciate your commitment, but they treat you like 18-year-old kids now. They want you to go out and see the world and not just be on the doles for them. Because the way they look at it, from a worker's perspective, you're a hard worker, you show up, you do the job, you're happy, you're hoping the company's successful, and all that's well and good. But if you start costing the company money, maybe too much overtime, maybe there are too many claims for workers' comp, it could be anything. And they have to do layoffs. That's where you run into that gray area. the level of uncertainty that they have. So you want to make sure that you're always ready to take on the challenge of probably going back out there and finding something else. But you want to have something where you can be proficient in, where you're not starting at the entry level, because that's going to be key. Now, you might be addicted to the lifestyle that you get from the job that you have. And in many cases, people who get displaced by jobs such as unemployment, that kind of thing, they will wind up having to go and start from scratch once again. You don't want to be that guy. You want to be someone that can use your experience, your education, your training in order to get something. Now, this is the reason why I stress college a lot. The reason being, it's not a trade. You get certain skill sets that you can use in different environments with a college degree. It's not like a trade school where they train you on one function, and you do that function in 6 months, you get your little diploma, and you go out there. And then you go take a job, and you're pissed off because all these college boys that really don't have any experience and don't know what they're doing are getting these positions, and they're over you making more money than you. And they're also more versatile in their career. When I worked in IT, my boss, who was a CFO, guess what he was? A music major in college. But he had taken a lot of business courses in his curriculum, and that's what helped him. So it all depends. And then you have the office politics as usual, where somebody doesn't like you and they're going to make you pay the price because they don't like you. You have to deal with that. And there are others where they may have a bias against you for whatever reason. Maybe the person's from the same school they graduated from or something of that sort. So you're going to have office politics in almost every environment. That doesn't cease. That just comes with the territory. So what you're doing as a man, when you take on responsibility of a family, you're taking on the responsibility whether or not times are good, bad, or indifferent in the job market. Children are not going to stop wanting food because you don't have a job or because you can't provide. So therefore, there's a lot of pressure that's applied to you. This is one of the reasons why a lot of these Gen Zers are not married, are not talking about even getting serious about a relationship. It's not only the emotional protection that they're going for, it's also the financial protection that they're going for. A lot of them are not talking about buying homes, flashy cars, and all of that stuff. Because they realize now that they don't have to go out and try to impress anyone. They could just go and be themselves as they are, and that's enough. Now, there are a few things that we have to face. A lot of people don't want to face them. One of them is the fact that you have to know your limitations, what you can actually do and what you think you can do. And you got to differentiate between the two. And a lot of people don't like doing that because it's no fun. But sometimes you got to decide, because it's going to be something that you may have to look at some point. A lot of you have taken jobs you can't stand. Some of you have taken jobs just to pay your child support, still living at home with mom, trying to make ends meet. And you think about it, but you don't want to say it. This is money I need to be putting away for my future, my retirement. And I'm sending money to a lady that I don't like, paying for a kid that I didn't want. Then there are other guys who don't mind it at all because they're paying for what they wanted. So it varies. And like I said, children and family is not made for everybody. There are some people that know all the consequences and accepted the responsibility. Kudos to them for standing up and doing the right thing. But that was a lifestyle choice they made. You see, the biggest danger in a relationship is when a person that you're with in that relationship takes away your choice. And they give you the options of what they want you to have. They choose what you can choose. The woman who gets pregnant and didn't tell you. And she keeps the baby, breaks up with you, and you think you got it made. So you go on, you get your another lady, start your family. Then at 45, you get hit up for child support. And you're in the arrears. Not knowing the whole time you were a father. Or even worse, you wind up realizing after a DNA test that you're not the father, even though you did everything for that child. And now you want to see if you can get your money back, and you can't. So there are a lot of things you have to really consider. A lot of things, fellas. Because see, after you got over that ego trip of masculinity, when it comes down to being a man, having your little kid, and bragging about how great the kid is and how great your woman is, and things don't work out between you and her, then all of a sudden that praise turns to angst. Especially if it gets to a point where you're paying for a kid that you can't see. Or she won't let you. She's constantly moving the kid around to different relatives. You see the kid at birth. You're with her until the kid's about 5 or 6 years old. Y'all have a falling out. Then you don't see the kid again until he's 17 or 18. And he's looking at you as if to say, where were you? Because he's only been fed whatever the mother may have given him in a negative sense about you. And this can backfire on mothers. Because that kid's going to weigh the odds. I said, now, whoa, wait a minute. Whoa, wait just a minute. You told me he was this, this, and this, and he told me otherwise. Comparison and contrast. Even when my mom and dad divorced, I was around 7 or 8. My dad was still in my life just like he was in the beginning. There was no anger or animosity between the two of them. I didn't realize until later on, my mother told me, she said, the reason why me and your dad split up was because your dad was older and he was getting into his health issues. And she said, I wanted to stay with him. I wanted it to work out between us. But he was embarrassed. He thought of himself as a bird. I didn't notice that as a child. Even though he was totally blind, as I grew older, I still learned a lot from him. He was a good man. I wanted to measure up to his level, his standard. Not to impress him, but to be like him. And my mother told me, said, son, he's your role model. And my father used to tell me, you could take some things from me, but I want you to be better than I am. And with that, I took it to heart. Not to be better than he was. But what they did, they took the aspirations that they wanted for me, and they allowed me to take on those aspirations in my own way to go forward. I was never spoon-fed anything, even religion. My dad was a deacon in the church. Mom played the piano in the organ. And they told me, we're going to expose you to the church, but now we're not indoctrinating you in the church. We want you to learn, look at other things, look at other religions, read up on them. Because they were giving me something that many of their ancestors didn't have. And that was a choice. And I respected that. Because there were kids in my peer group that I would see, their parents told them, oh no, you got to get all A's, you got to do all that. I got A's and B's in my classes because I loved learning. I loved not knowing something and then coming out of a room knowing something that would help me in life. And I never forget, I had a teacher by the name of Mr. Spann, taught biology at Blackburn Junior High School. And he said something to the effect of, as long as you keep learning, you will always live. I didn't know what that meant at the time. But over the years, I learned. Observation is your biggest teacher. Not trying to defend what you don't know. But observing and sharing what you do know. So, you young men out there, I'm just telling you, you want to have a strong mind and a weak back, not a strong back and a weak mind. And that weak back and that strong mind comes from sitting in a chair, as opposed to bending over, picking up something heavy. We'll always need workers in every capacity. But see, the way our culture is in America, we're not educating thinkers, planners. We're educating now, not just workers. You're looking at the founding of this country. As I always tell you, the founding of this country was initially set up by the British as a business enterprise, not as a democracy. It was a monarchy. And what happened, the wealthy kept that business enterprise since going, only giving the workers and everyone else the promise through democracy for a better life. With the aspiration of doing better is what motivates everyone every day. Get up to go to that job. Some people don't look at it that way. They look at it, well, I got to pay these damn bills. But yeah, you got to do that. And the one thing that you want to do is to make sure that you have checked out all your opportunities before you take on a routine. What is the routine? Going into consumer debt, perpetual debt, and cycling it through. Where your paycheck goes. And you look at the end of the month and you got more month left than you got money. Living within and below your means. And you have some people that have a job that doesn't really fulfill them. And so what they wind up doing is going out and partying a lot just to forget about it. Forget about all their problems. For that brief moment, maybe 4 hours in a nightclub or some other kind of venue. Only for it to build up again for them to want to do something else the next weekend. And they start living for the weekend. I think it was the Isley Brothers that sang that song. When you get into that cycle, it's going to be hard for you to break. Once you get that family going, and you're really not where you want to be in life financially. Especially if you have a demanding woman that's telling you you need more, you need to make more, you need to do more. And if she leverages her beauty against you because you don't feel like you're good enough to be with her, and you're trying to shuck and dance and trying to keep up, and what she's doing is raising the bar higher and higher and higher for you. I've known women that told their husbands that they were not going to have a child. If they were going to have a child, they were going to adopt, but they didn't want to mess their bodies up. Literally. Because the one thing that they looked at was, the way I look is my value. And those guys out there busting their asses, trying to make ends meet, trying to keep up, giving them some of the nicest things in the world. And the guy is happy to be with her because she's the best thing he ever had. Fellas, if you're going to get a partner, a female partner in your life, male as well if you're gay, or if you're lesbian, transgender, whatever, doesn't matter. You better get somebody in your life that has a skill set. Someone that can also take care of themselves and fend for themselves before you meet them, and to assist after you've met them. The last thing you would want is someone who can't do it. Because what's going to happen, if you're not careful, if you guys break up or divorce, depending on what state you're in, some places you actually get taken to court for breaking up with someone over a promise. You may be looking at paying alimony. And it's your own damn fault. And you have a contingent of women out there that are literally looking for a man where they don't have to work. You the man? Everything financial is on you, including taking care of me. This is the reason why I tell you guys, you first meet a woman and she's telling you you gotta pay for a babysitter, you gotta do her hair and nails, you gotta buy her something to wear before you take her out. She can't take care of herself. Why the hell would you take care of her? Who's gonna take care of her if you didn't show up? Oh, she'd figure out a way. And that's what you have to look at. What I'm telling you is, don't mess your life up over some bullshit. You don't have to. Don't let the insecurity of your masculine status be an issue. You were born male. You accept it. What's the problem? Well, because a woman told you that you were gay, or because you were this or you were that. She's only saying that because she's frustrated she can't be with you and exploit you. So it means nothing. You can go and walk down the street and find somebody that'll say the same thing about you if you don't give them a dollar. So what have you lost? That's the question. All right, now let's look at the value of an education. There's a lot of people write in about this in particular. What is the value of one? Because see, some people approach it as if it's nothing more than just a high school diploma going in for college. And they're quick to point out people that fail that they knew. I used to be the same way. I was a Mustang. I was one of those guys that was making good money without a degree, and I thought, what the hell are they talking about? You can go to a damn school. Because at the time I thought, oh, okay, the only thing I gotta do is study up on it and I can just go in and do it. And then I had to realize that it took more than that. And upon doing so, I began to realize how much I didn't know. And then you get to a point where you start tap dancing about things like you, as if you know it when you don't. Oh boy, that's something else. You see these people scrambling all the time. Got to show you how smart they are, how educated they are. And they didn't go to school. And it'll take them 10 minutes to explain a simple concept. Because they never took themselves seriously enough in order to actually take on the responsibility of doing it. Challenge themselves. I hear people all the time, oh yeah, I was not good in school. Okay, maybe it doesn't have to necessarily be you. It could be the learning method. It could be the teacher. It could be the subject matter that you didn't have an interest in. And yet we have a lot of people complaining about the teachers. But we have to look at a few things here. We've asked a lot of teachers to do. We have treated teachers like shit in this society. That's the reason why many of them are quitting. That's the reason why in my class, when we graduated, nobody wanted to be a teacher. There was no benefit as we saw it. What are we going to do? Go and be called out by a parent because we told them the truth that their kid got an F when they did get an F? Are the parents going to go and intervene and say, oh, it's because you're biased. The test is biased. The curriculum is biased. No. Maybe your kid needs to study more. I know my kid shouldn't be getting this kind of grade. Dated a lady who was a school teacher. She was dealing with a situation with a parent. The boy wouldn't come to class. That was the problem. And he failed. And she wanted to get the principal involved, the school district, and everybody else. And of course, I gave her my shorthanded opinion at the time. I said, tell him he's a rock. What do you mean he's a rock? He's a rock. Can't teach a rock. But of course, she couldn't do that. Some of the teachers have to go out and buy supplies. Some even had to go to kids' homes to make sure that they were doing their homework, following up with them, trying to help them not fail. In some cases, doing the work the parents should have been doing in the first place, trying to help them. When I was growing up, couldn't do that kind of stuff. Reason being, there was always eyes on you. Always. Mess up at school if you want to. Parents find out about it. That wasn't gonna be too good for you. So you had to make sure that you were on your P's and Q's, doing the right thing. Doing what you were supposed to do, being where you were supposed to be at any given time. Couldn't shift the responsibility on someone else. The parents didn't want to hear about what the teacher wasn't doing. They were only concerned about what you weren't doing. But that's been turned on its head lately. Where now you don't have to be accountable. You just come home and blame the teacher for the homework being too complex, and that's enough. That's sufficient. That'll get the parent riled up to go up there and want to sue the school district. And of course, many people don't like that. They like the way it is. But at some point, we're going to have to face it. We're going to have to face it. The reason why a lot of us are complacent and withdrawn is because it's too large of a hill to climb. It's much easier just to be docile and just let things play out as they may. And there's some parents out there that really fight for their kids, really advocate for them. In other words, hold them accountable instead of the teachers and the school districts and say, why haven't you done your homework? Why are you just procrastinating? Why are you sitting there on the video games and those kind of things and not doing what you need to do in order to make it? Many don't have an answer. And the reason why they don't is because they never put forth the effort and feel as though they had to. Because mommy's gonna make everything all right. Go down to that school district and give them a piece of my mind. Nope. Probably need to go down there and learn a few things from them about your own child that you probably don't know. Now, I know for some of you, this is a bit extreme. Because we don't want to go back to where we were. Now, here's the thing. It's not even about that as much as it's about these kids eventually getting to a point where they can actually work towards their own benefit in a way where they're supported. But they have to be accountable. And a lot of people don't like doing that. because they feel as though they're putting too much on the child. That kid is going to be able to make it, just like others have throughout the past. But I get it. Some people think, oh, it's my kid, so it's going to be different. But yet, it's unfair for the teachers to be blamed for a child that doesn't do their homework. The teachers should not be blamed for the curriculum. The teachers should not be blamed for some of the shortcomings of the child that starts at home and not at school. Things such as bullying has always been a problem since time immemorial. And I remember when I was in school, there were some guys that you didn't want to be around. They were bad news. You mess around and get around them, nothing good was ever going to happen. It was always going to be the same. And so you had to learn how to eventually keep your distance and stay focused. Because as long as you did that, you were in good shape. You was in good shape. You were in good shape, good stead. Because the minute you came out and got with the wrong crowd, you paid the price. That's something you didn't want to do. It wasn't worth it. So you went on and made it anyway. You persevered through it. You didn't let them deter you. You didn't let them scare you off. You stayed steadfast to your beliefs, to your values. And that's what it takes. But we're running out of that now. And what does this have to do with men? Well, a lot of these guys are realizing now that, hey, wait a minute. Why should I be treated like this when I could do better? Why am I only looked at as a paycheck? Why do I feel so down and bad about myself? There's no reason for me to feel bad. I have done nothing wrong. But you have some folks that take that burden on, such as looking at being rejected as some form of disrespect. Start wearing their feelings on their sleeves. And thinking the world owes them something in return. Owes them attention, notoriety, some sort of respect as they see it from their perspective. Nope, you bring that on to yourself. Nobody else does. And these young men grow up angry, frustrated, displaced, and they feel hopeless. You look at what happened in Nashville. The person had a manifesto, upset with the school for something none of those people there at that school did to that person. People that individual shot had nothing to do with them. But they had to have someone to blame. The first step in self-discovery is embracing the things that you would normally blame on someone else. Then after embracing them, looking to improve, to make yourself a better person. in general, to grow. You know, there are some people that feel bad. They wake up feeling bad. They go to work feeling bad. Every time you see them, they're feeling bad. They weren't born that way. They came out that way because they allowed themselves to get down into that hole, that pit of depression, that pit of sadness. And of course, we all experience sadness every once in a while. We don't get something, we get disappointed. I'd rather be disappointed than sad anytime. Disappointment's temporary. You experience a setback? Okay. But the good thing about it is that as long as the sun shines the next day, there's a good possibility you can do better. And that's what you got to think about. You got a lot to offer, no matter where you are in life, no matter what your education level is. And the first person you need to offer all of these benefits to is yourself. I can't tell you how many people I've known throughout the years that gave up on themselves early on and started living vicariously through their kids. My son's going to Harvard. Like, okay, that's good. This friend's son of mine went to Harvard one semester and dropped out. They disowned the kid. Look, a lot of times parents want their kids to do things they couldn't do. But it's the kid's life. The only thing you can do is guide them the best way you can. I hope they come out all right. There's been a many parent on their deathbed, even when their kid was in their 60s and the mom was in her 90s, worried about whether her boy was going to make it still. That's what parents do. They make that commitment and stick by their children. But you do them a disservice when you coddle them too much and insulate them from society and from life, or allow themselves to self-isolate to a point where they're totally detached. We have a lot of kids that feel as though they don't belong. Why do you think you have all this self-realization and self-identity, all these inspirational quotes that people are putting in their offices and things? Motivation for them not to go negative. And the answer's inside of them. Many people have the answers to their own riddle and don't realize it. The only thing they have to do is just think for a moment and think it through. They'll come up with some wise solutions. Very wise solutions. To a point where they'll have that eureka moment. Why the hell didn't I do that in the first place? Yeah, that's all it took. That's all it took. All right, folks, so we covered a lot. We talked about budgeting and finance a bit. We talked about careers a bit. We talked about some of the expected outcomes and some of the things you will need to look out for and some of the things you need to plan for in life. And even though this was geared toward mainly the men Ladies, you could take some of this too. Because see, the one thing you have to realize is that no matter what, there is no one way to do anything when it comes down to existing on this planet and making it the most comfortable place you possibly can for yourself. Different ways. But the one thing to keep in mind is to never lose focus and never lose hope. Just because you've made some choices in life that may not have worked out for you, having a kid too soon, going into some sort of debt, I want you to think about a few things here. The first one is to think about is the fact that it could be much worse than it is. The next thing is, you're not half as bad off as some others. And you don't want to do that as a placebo to make you feel better. But what I'm saying is that everybody has a struggle. Some have several struggles. And some people don't have any struggles at all, but take on others just for the excitement. And others do it in order to try to prove themselves, prove their trustworthiness, prove their loyalty, you name it. But the one thing to keep in mind, most of all, how you treat yourself is very important. That's where it starts. People will treat you according to the way you treat yourself. And that means, think about it. When you're thinking about taking a job that's risky, how can I protect myself so that I don't wind up injured? I don't wind up losing out. There's nothing wrong with that. See, workers have always been taught you only have to worry about preserving the company. You got to worry about self-preservation as well. Career longevity, career growth, industry growth. That's going to be important. And don't allow yourself to get to a point where you just sit back and then all of a sudden, at age 50, now you got to bust your ass to be somebody or do something. You don't want to procrastinate. That will take a lot of energy for you to try to come back from that procrastination. You don't need to. It's not a motivational speech, it's just to make you think. Because a lot of times, we get so caught up, we don't. We just do. Now the way our society is going, the way the economy is going, you're going to have to be a thinker in order to compete. You just can't come in and be a hard worker anymore. You got to be a facilitator, someone that could actually resolve issues, someone that can actually step through certain incompatibilities. You have to deal with personalities that you may not have had to deal with in the past. Yes, and some of the people you don't like, you'll have to deal with. When you're younger, you sometimes think, well, you know, I don't like this boss, I'll just get another job. As you get these responsibilities stacked on your shoulders, you realize that longevity is going to be something you got to look at, whether you like it or not. But the thing is, you want to be in a place where at least you could be happy and be yourself. The last thing you want to be is somewhere where you're frustrated, you're upset, you're at each other's throat all the time, and you're constantly worried about the minute things in life. I work for companies where There were people that were on food stamps, fully employed. And they would get ridiculed when they would go to the store for pulling out those food stamps. Because the job didn't pay enough. The politicians will tell them, oh, you know, we got jobs for you. Jobs are coming to the community. They're coming to these different areas. And the jobs that show up are good for kids living at home with parents paying the bills that have real jobs. But it does very little for those that are trying to sustain a family. And we got to look at it. Until you get to a point where you take yourself seriously, no one else will. And it starts by you really coming up with a plan, a structured plan with your career. Where you plan on going? What do you plan on doing? How do you plan on getting there? Because this is going to be a priority. And you got to figure out exactly how this is going to play out for you. Now, true enough, we can always have plans and they not go as we planned them to. That's understandable. But what is your contingency? What do you do if the bottom falls out of everything? What kind of strategy do you have? And it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to work. It's just to give you the comfort of knowing that, hey, you know, okay, this happened. Let me try this. Okay, if this fails, big deal. You made an effort to try to save yourself. And sometimes people don't even do that. And you should. Because the company's not looking out for you. And you have to look out for yourself. Your career and everything else. And remember that your career is dependent on the next decision that has to be made in the budget. So you may have to be flexible. If it means that you may have to change careers, go to another job or something like that, you want to prep yourself for it. I remember every job I applied for, you know the first thing I did? Went to the library, researched as much as I could about that particular job, not just to pass the interview, but to understand what the job entailed and what the responsibilities were. And made the correlation between the job and the job description. And in that job description, I saw a lot of areas I needed to work on, and I worked on those areas to not only make me a better employee, but a better person. And sometimes that's the kind of commitment you have to make because you got a lot at stake when you have a family. You just can't walk away. And therefore, you got to bite the bullet. And a lot of people don't like doing that, but the main thing is to be comfortable in a job that you're okay with, that you're proud of, and that you're not ashamed to be in. And that's not really giving you a whole bunch of headaches for the job. You would rather have problems with the people on the job than the job itself. Because people are given. You're going to have problems with people no matter who you... You could have one person in the room and there's a fight to break out with that one person fighting themselves. So you have to look at it from the standpoint that many of these folks may be unhappy as people, but you only have to deal with them as long as you work with them in that environment only. That means you don't bring that home. Don't get mad at your wife and get mad at the dog because you had a bad day at work. What you have to do is every time you go home from work, you shut that place out until you have to show up there again. When I say that, I mean, you don't even think about it until you have to walk into the facility. To have that peace of mind. And then tell yourself, okay, I got to be in here for 8 hours, 9 hours, 10 hours, whatever it is, to get through it. I worked in hostile work environments. I worked in, let me tell you something. I had one job where I had a boss, and he would literally call me and several other minorities in the office to tell a racist joke. And if you tried to go to HR on that, good luck. Because they loved it. You were always the bad guy. You'll run across that with office politics, for sure. Nepotism and all the rest. Another thing that might help you as well, if you're going to work for a family business, it would be strongly advised that you have an idea of how things operate there before you start working. Only reason why I say this in particular is because there might be a fight for power within the company between the family members, and you as an employee are caught in the middle. And many times you might not know what to do. And of course, the best practice is to stay out of it. But in some cases, they'll let you go for not choosing a side. It's sad, but that's the way they operate in some environments. So you don't want to put yourself in that predicament either. Because it's not a real fun place to be. Well, folks, I'm going to call it a night. It's been a pleasure. The takeaways from this primarily is have a plan for contingency in the event you get laid off, get hurt, something of that sort. Make sure that you look out for yourself. The company is definitely doing it for itself. Also, make sure that the choices that you make in life are your choices and not someone else's that they have pretty much laid out and said, you're going to abide by my decision. You don't have to. Don't put yourself in that predicament. You don't need to be backed up in a corner like that. And if something's too stressful, let it go. Don't burn yourself out. That can be frustrating. Take care, folks.
We at Romantic Truth appreciate your listenership.
Listeners, you're invited to stream and listen to Jorzen's music on Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, AudioMac, or Deezer. Type in JAUSAN in the search for artists to follow and like modern instrumental music from his discography.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those solely of the host and are not condoned or endorsed by Romantic Truth, Anchor, or any of its affiliates.
The advice given herein is the expressed opinion of the host and not to be used for legal, marital, or family counseling, or for professional practice purposes. In the event for professional assistance, please contact the local licensed professional family counselor, marriage counselor, or social services professional in your region.
If you need someone to talk to in regards to help, you may contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 800-273-8255, available 24 hours. All correspondences read on the show have been pre-screened and pre-approved by the submitter to be aired on the show.
Be advised that all of the background music of production not provided by Anchor is owned by James Adams and Jorzen 1 Music, exclusively licensed for this Romantic Truth podcast under waiver.
Please understand that there were no people or animals hurt in the segments of this show, including plants. All sound effects were improvised in the studio setting with props. We are an equal opportunity employer with 2 Yorkie poodles and a rat terrier as the security detail.
Please be advised that the content of this podcast is under copyright by Romantic Truth and James Adams.